But either way, a recreational drug should have nothing to do with the GAA, because it's effectively like drinking. It's like a player going out on a Saturday night and drinking, and the GAA making a thing of it on the Monday morning. Obviously, if it's a performance-enhancing drug, then it is a GAA issue, and they do have to look into it. But if it's not, if it does turn out that this is some sort of a recreational drug, and it's a young player who, I mean, you know, come on, every young person at some stage or another is around that or whatever, and it would have nothing to do with the GAA. And I think, until we know the full facts, this player could be getting vilified for no reason at all, or very unfairly. And yeah, I think until we know all the facts, it's hard to really call. But I would, in a sense, agree.
And the time now, 23 minutes to the hour. I'm joined on the line now by Liam Horan, Managing Director of Slieneagh Careers, to talk about jobs, job interviews and the like. Liam, good evening to you.
Good evening, Aidan.
And thank you very much indeed, as always, for joining us. We're going to start this evening, Liam, with an email from DD, and the following question. I want to apply for a job I've seen advertised, but I don't want to show my face just yet. My company has a connection with the company advertising the job, and I'm afraid word would get back. Is it off limits, or are there other way around this?
I think you never fully know, but the question does imply that it kind of is off limits, or not so much off limits, or it's something that DD doesn't want, somebody else don't want to go to right now. And I think caution is probably well placed in these cases. People do talk, and they mightn't realise where they're talking sometimes. And in a small sector or business environment, you'd be surprised what might get around. So I think that DD's caution is probably no harm. But there will come a time, of course, no matter what way they go about it, that they will have to show their heads, put their head above the parapet. What can be done, and I've seen it work quite effectively on a number of occasions, is to get somebody else to make what I would call a blind approach for a candidate. Somebody you would trust who wouldn't necessarily be obviously linked with you, to send the target company a summary of your experience, your suitability, without even revealing your gender. You know, so just to say, I know somebody who might suit this role for you. They're interested in making a discreet inquiry right now, hence the fact that it's coming through me. If the following experience is of interest to you, perhaps you might let me know, and then I can do a formal introduction. So what you're trying to ascertain is, is your profile likely to get considered for the job? And if it is, then you'll have to show your hand. But it's probably not a good idea to show your hand before you know that, because, as I said, it's a small environment. And what I've seen happen in a number of cases, that companies who are approached in this manner actually take it quite seriously and kind of say, OK, fair enough, we understand the situation, they respect the situation, and probably conclude as well that the person doing it is very serious about their career, you know, because one thing that employers do consider, perhaps even subconsciously, is, well, how will they treat me when I'm their employer, and will they go rushing off willy-nilly to another organisation? So the fact that you're showing a bit of discreet professionalism, I'd say, could go a long way. The one thing I'd say, though, is that with the blind approach, is that you can't drag it on too long, and you do need to come out above the parapet and present yourself, you know, reasonably early in the process, but not as early as right now. And what you don't want to happen is that the person who does the introducing for you, they shouldn't become a negotiator on your behalf. They're merely somebody who introduces for you. I saw one case where the person doing the blind introduction ended up getting dragged into not so much salary negotiation, but discussing existing salary versus possible salary. And the company who were being targeted felt it was a bridge too far, because companies don't want to necessarily discuss salary with somebody who hasn't been appointed, offered a job yet. So it can be done in the way I say, but know when to get out of it as well, too, is the advice I give DD there.
And of course, DD and every other DD has to be aware that there are certain risks in this, and there's no guarantee at all that the company advertising the job won't get wind of the involvement of the other company, should I say, the current employer of DD, because it's closely associated with the company to which he has made the application. There may well be a likelihood that this will be blown out of the water.
Absolutely, and that's probably why DD needs to sort of time their run very effectively. Now, what I would say as well, though, is that when a formal application is made, so the host company or the target company would, in all likelihood, you know, respect that process as well while it's going on. But you don't know what's going to happen 3 months down the road if you didn't get the job, where it comes back to haunt you, that, you know, you danced with the devil kind of thing. So it's a tricky enough area. What I would say to DD, though, is that, you know, you own your own career. It's up to you to make your career move. So the prospect of not getting the job and the damage that might cause to your current career is something you must weigh up from your perspective as much as anything else, not just from the perspective of annoying your current employer, but what is the impact of me annoying my current employer. And one of the things that often happens as well, as we know, maybe not as much as used to, is that getting a rival offer or a rival interest can lead to you getting a stronger position within your own company. So these are things that, from the question, we can't fully discern, but that DD would want to consider, but to consider from their own end. It can be easy to consider from the employer's end, but consider all of this from your own end. What is the impact for me here? Because it's up to you to make your own career moves, and it can be hard to kind of sort of hold on to that concept for yourself, but that's ultimately what you're talking about. It's a career move, and you should own your own career moves.
And just in relation to DD, Liam, would there be any point in DD simply being upfront in relation to this and going to her current employer and simply saying, look, this job is advertised, I've been very happy here, I've learned enormous experience under your watch, but I do have certain plans in terms of my career path, and I believe that a move to that company might be the next stage?
Okay, in general, my answer would be no, that's a dangerous thing to do.
Why?
Well, you may not get the job, okay? So I think, again, we're talking about generalizations here, but the time you tell your employer that you've been offered, that you're going to another job, and you've been offered another job, and you've got the contract, and you're happy with it. Because if you don't get it, all of a sudden you've damaged the relationship, possibly with your own boss. And I think bosses generally understand that people do move on. It happens all the time. But I think to do it halfway through the process or early through the process creates all sorts of pressure as the boss may be saying, well, you know, you're kind of gone. Whether you go this time or you go again, you're gone on me. You've got to explain to your boss what happened. The boss may start trying to pick your brains on how the whole process went with the rival company. I think it's an unnecessary pressure. Sometimes people who have a very good relationship with their boss feel the need to do that. My advice generally is don't, or if you're going to do it, be very, very sure that it's the right thing to do. If in doubt, I would leave out rather than do, you know what I mean?
And yet, on the other hand, if you get the job and you go to your employer and you say, look, I have applied for this job, I've been successful, I'm now going to work my 4 weeks' notice, there might be a rather negative reaction to that too.
Yes, but you've got your new job, do you know what I mean? And you've done it, you're not obliged to tell your employer, you're giving them the proper notice, you know. You can't be responsible for ensuring that they don't burn the bridge. And there are ways of keeping the bridge afloat or keeping the bridge up. You know, there are ways of doing that. You know, when you do hand your employer notice, tell them where you're going, why you're going, you know, reaffirm that you're happy while you're there, but this is a good career move for me. And if they want to take a negative from that, you know, you can't necessarily control that. But I think to go too early and, you know, just creates too much pressure on yourself. And in career moves, you need to protect yourself, because we all know that career moves can be incredibly demanding and draining. We've all sat on offers and wondered about this and been unhappy in jobs and different things. So, you know, the first rule of career development is protect yourself and do things that suit yourself. Sounds a bit sort of kind of glib, but I mean, do things that protect yourself and that are good for you. And if they're not good for others, try and soften the blow, but it must be good for you.
I suppose, Liam, anyone listening to us who finds himself or herself in DD's position, the rule is handle this one with great care.
Indeed.
Okay, let's move on to a second email from LJ. Can you outline some common but perhaps less well-known mistakes people make at interviews? I feel I know the obvious ones, but wonder if there are any others I should consider.
Right, well, I suppose not turning up is a fatal one. Not notifying them that you're not going to turn up is another one. Turning up late is one that is surprisingly, I won't say it's commonplace, but it does happen. A weak handshake can creep the interviewers out. A strong handshake, where you try and squeeze the blood from their hands and twist them around the room, can creep them out as well. Poor eye contact, a general shiftiness, can be one that people can cause bother, because it can unnerve everybody in the interview room. Rambling on without focus, just talking on ad nauseum without any real purpose to where you're going. Over-promising is another one as well. That's quite common, actually, when people get into a mode where they start talking themselves up too much. When they get into that point, they often can ignore the evidence of their own careers. I think it's good to show some humility and say, yes, I have skills in this area, I have achievements in this area, but, you know, not to say that you're the greatest thing since sliced pan, you know. Displaying little or no knowledge of the sector or the company, very common as well, too. Bad-mouthing current employers or previous employers, common and a dangerous thing to do as well, I would say. And also, kind of part of over-promising, just making statements or telling stories or relaying incidents that don't really ring true. Kind of things, stories people tell on a Saturday night in the bar to make themselves feel good about themselves. In interviews, be very careful what you go telling, because you might be asked to substantiate or you might be challenged on it. And I've sat in interview panels where people have made fairly outlandish claims that just don't really stack up, and that can, you know, create a bad vibe and can also inspire the interviewer to bring you down a road that maybe is not comfortable for you. I would say to LJ overall, though, rather than focusing on what they shouldn't do, to always, as I say here, focus on what you should do. What are the skills, the values, the competencies, the achievements you can bring to this company, and where is the proof, and where is the value for this company? So, you know, try and look at what the company is actually looking for and see what parts of your experience measure up to what the company is looking for, and focus on that, and don't overpromise, but don't undersell yourself either.
And I suppose what people should never forget about is that an employer sitting on an interview board has been there, done that, and will be able to see through an individual as to whether or not they're absolutely genuine or otherwise.
Yes, and employers tend to be tolerant of people being nervous, people being a little bit, you know, uncomfortable, because it's a very difficult environment. And in fact, I would say can offer them a little bit of sympathy for people as well, because as you say, we've all been that soldier. So don't be trying to be overly slick or trying to, you know, be everything, be having all your ducks in a row. You needn't have that. You know, an honesty as well, and you know, doing your best in the interview to use this 40 minutes to show you why you should employ me. Employers pick up on that, and just as quickly as they pick up on, as you say, there are people bluffing and overselling and overstating and overclaiming. They pick up on, I think, on both sides of that coin.
And Liam, not quite related to what we've been discussing in the last few minutes, but the text has come in. Clearly, this individual is applying for a rather high-powered job. They've got very significant qualifications. But at the interview stage, if you present with certain qualifications, academic qualifications, clearly you're going to be asked about those qualifications. But in a situation like that, to what extent will the qualifications become more important than, let's say, as this person is saying, the personality of the individual in the eyes of the interviewer?
Okay, well, I suppose there are a few things I'd say on that. First of all, there are certain qualifications that if you don't have them, you won't be called to interview. But if you have them, quite often the other candidates will have them as well too. So to hide totally behind the qualifications, I would feel, would be a bad idea. I think that the person being interviewed should embody everything, be it the qualifications, the experience, and the, you know, in the sector, and the general life experience as well. So, you know, the qualification alone will very, very rarely get you the job, I would say, for the point I made, that others in the race will have similar or exactly the same qualifications. So you've got to have more than that. Now, if you're younger starting out, it might be all you have. It might be the strongest thing you have. But the behavioural side of it is hugely important. The fact that you're willing to, you know, all the cliches kind of thing, go the extra mile, that you in previous jobs you've outperformed and you've done this and that. You know, that the whole behavioural side of it is hugely important. In America, the big phrase in recruiting is you hire for attitude. And in a kind of a 50-50 call, many recruiters will pick the person with a lesser qualification because they have a better attitude, a better willingness to develop themselves, to get on. So I would say qualifications are hugely important. I have great respect for education, but don't just hide behind it. There's got to be more of you there as well, too. Your personality, your previous performance, your your drive for the job, your enthusiasm, those kind of things.
And I suppose when an employer sees two excellent candidates, both with similar, if not identical, qualifications, then it moves away from there.
Correct.
into the what's the word I'm looking for?
Behavioural side.
Yes, exactly. Yes.
And you know, this is something that people often forget, that what decides the interview may not even be the thing you think most about. It could be something. In fact, sometimes an interview is decided by who is not as weak as the other person, if you know what I mean. That, you know, a weakness can decide the interview as much as a strength, if you know what I mean. So you've got to cover off all bases, not just to kind of go in and say, well, this is what I have, take it or leave it kind of thing. You've got to be covering off all bases. And there needs to be a kind of a balance in your interview as well, where if you're very strong academically, you should balance that with more pragmatic or practical sides of you, just as if you're seem to be very pragmatic and practical, you should also highlight training, courses, education you've done as well. So, you know, to put all your eggs in one basket is a very dangerous thing in an interview. It's got to be an all-round performance, an all-round, I don't even like the word performance, an all-round sort of exhibition of who you are.
That's a very important point, isn't it, that even though you may be very highly qualified, and that's important in terms of being called for interview, the employer may be looking for someone who's much more pragmatic, or at least is pragmatic as opposed to entirely academic.
Yes. And, you know, we particularly here in the west of Ireland, you know, there's companies often employ people to work in not just using their basic qualification, their main qualification, but actually in a more multitasking kind of a way. So they frequently want people who are broader and are able to handle various things. And that pragmatism can be hugely important.
Very good, Liam. We shall leave it there. Thank you very much indeed, as always, for joining us on the programme this evening. And we'll talk to you again next Monday evening, usual time, about 5:30.
Thank you very much, Aidan.
And that's Liam Horan, Managing Director of Schlienawa Careers Limited.